most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome to hour number three of Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes, along with Vince Ferrar. We come to you from the Oak Ridge Nissan. That is the September football kickoff sale that's going on. Come by here and check out. They have stiff-armed the competition to be the number one volume dealer in not just East Tennessee, but in the state of Tennessee, Oak Ridge Nissan. Please now to bring us the Pigskin panel. Really enjoyed having it last year. Our Pigskin panel brought to you by Phoenix Conversions, East Tennessee's truck accessory superstore. When it has to be the best, call Phoenix Conversions. We're joined by VFL Will Overstreet. Will, how are you doing?
Very well today, Jimmy. Doing really well. Glad to be on again and be talking football.
Yes, sir, and glad that we've got some football to talk about. Also, John Pennington, he is with the Sports Source, and the Sports Source has gone to a 90-minute show. John Pennington, how are you doing?
Doing good. Ditto everything Will said. It's good to be talking football.
Yes, sir. What can we look forward to this Sunday on the Sports Source?
Well, we'll be breaking down the 18th opener that we've covered. This will be year 18 for the Sports Source, so it'll be you, Chuck Cavalaris, Josh Ward, VFL's galore, including Will Overstreet. So should be a fun 90 minutes to break down whether it's a win or a loss. Several of the old segments that people like and adding some new stuff this year, some new twists. Should be fun. 90 minutes, 11 a.m. Sunday morning on WATE6.
All right, I want to ask you guys off the top, because this just happened, about Jeremy Pruitt. He just got a raise. He is going to go from $3.8 million to $4.2 million. He declined to have it installed this year, waiting till next year, and he's got a lot of incentives that are built into this. And there, I've had a couple emails or texts saying, well, he's only 13 and 12. Why would you give him a boost like that? John Pennington, what are your thoughts on Jeremy Pruitt's two-year extension and raise?
Well, first of all, I mean, part of it's just the price of doing business. I mean, these guys, you constantly give them extensions. That's just how the business works. If you look at the second longest win streak in the country, which is what he's got, it's only six games, but still, if you look at that, you look at where the recruiting is, it makes sense that they would give him this. I think it was certainly in the works before all this COVID stuff hit. We were discussing it back in February, it seems. But the reality is, I mean, it's probably – I like the fact it's incentive-based. I like the fact that he said, let's just wait a year. At the same point, it's not a great time for anybody to be getting a raise in any way. It's just not a great look. And I would say that about any coach with any record. That's no knock on UT and Pruitt. It's what you have to do. But right now, it's not a great look to be doing at the moment.
Well, do you agree with John, and I do too, that I think a lot of this is tied to a six-game win streak and doing very well in recruiting? Do you think that's what led Tennessee to go in this direction with Pruitt?
Yeah, I think that. It's just in time of uncertainty too. So, you know, you're kind of sitting here going, well, what are we going to do in this? You know, if for whatever reason somebody came by and wanted to poach him, you know, you get a little worried and concerned at this point in time with all the uncertainty and all the things unknown. So I think, too, at this point, it's just looking at this and also saying, okay, let's just stabilize. We don't know how long things are going to be crazy and up in the air. So let's keep the guy we got. We think we've got some good signs and progression. So let's stay with him and make sure we don't have to worry about something abnormal coming out of the works and making this a whole lot more chaotic.
All right, Tennessee opens up tomorrow night at South Carolina, 7:30 kickoff. Certainly the concern is about Jarrett Garantano, very inconsistent a year ago, but he's got the same offensive coordinator back 2 years in a row, same quarterback 2 years in a row. Will Overstreet, what are your expectations of Jarrett Garantano?
Well, you expect him to take another step. I mean, he's been on the same system for the second year in a row, which you mentioned. And so you would think him working together with the offensive coordinator he's got, we've seen what Chaney's been able to do in the past with some guys that, you know, weren't playing up to par and figuring out how to work with them. So you think the combination of those two, he's going to take a step this year. However, I just have to see, you know, I have to see it to believe it. I mean, it should happen. It should be a step forward. But, you know, this is a guy that, for whatever reason, unless he had pressure on behind him, he's had issues. And so we've got to see that, you know, can he pull the trigger when he needs to pull the trigger and throw the ball and not let that delay and that second guessing come on? You know, hopefully it's cured and we come out of this scene a different guy. But until I see it, I'm not going to believe it.
John Pennington, Jim Chaney said that the way to become more consistent, repetition and knowledge. Do you expect to see a more consistent Garantano?
Maybe a little, but I'm in the same boat with Will. It's one of those things where after 4 years, I'm not sure that I'm going to suddenly expect a Joe Burrow-level leap from Garantano. I would feel better about him taking a step forward this year if he was doing the same repetitions and had the same knowledge with the same receivers. But yeah, when you lose three of your top four pass catchers, and one of those being a guy in Juwan Jennings who got you Lord knows how many first downs last year when you needed him on third down, that, I think, throws a wrinkle into this. Yes, he's in his second year with Chaney, second year of the offense, all of that should be good, but he's going to have a lot of receivers out there that aren't in their second year with Chaney. Is he going to trust those guys to be in the right spot? I'm like Will. One of the issues that he faced a lot last year was he just didn't seem confident enough to go somewhere with the football. It's like he saw it and he was a split second late in delivering it. Well, if you change a lot of his receivers, isn't that going to cause him mentally to sit there and go, okay, is Velus Jones going to be where he's supposed to be? I don't know. We'll know more after Saturday night. I expect him to take a small step forward. Will he take a massive step? I'm not going to go there until I see it.
Vince Farrar, your expectations for Jarrett Garantano?
Yeah, John's last point there about the receiver position, you know, not being experienced like he would want it to be, I think is key because, you know, if a receiver doesn't see the wrong check or rounds out his route and doesn't run it and end up in the spot that he anticipated, next thing you know, you may throw a pick where he's at a better understanding of what's going on. It's just he's not in sync with his receivers. Oh, by the way, we've had this offseason with not only not having the normal work between quarterback and receivers, plus that position has been one of the most hit hard by players missing time. So, you know, you've had a number of guys out. None of the freshmen appear on the two deep. So you have to wonder if that maybe offsets some of the improvement that you anticipate with Garantano. One of the most noteworthy things, that being said, of the preseason, of anything that a coach said, was Chris Winkie saying that Jared Garantano has improved maybe the most in anticipation. And that's one of the areas I think was his biggest struggle has been is waiting till guys are open instead of throwing them open and throwing with anticipation. He'd get rid of it too late. If he's improved in that area, even if guys aren't the most experienced, I think he can make a jump up, including a percentage completion percentage a little bit over 60%.
All right, I want to talk about Tennessee's strengths and weaknesses. We'll start with the strengths. I think we would all agree that offensive line could and should be a strength. So, Vince, going beyond that, what are a couple of other areas where you think Tennessee might have strengths?
Well, I think running back has the potential to, if Jim Chaney certainly is planning to use Gray and Chandler on the field at the same time, and if they can get some contributions out of some of those freshmen, it's not a deep group, obviously, but if you can find a third guy and those two are as good as they have at times shown, I think that position can be a strength for you. Another one potentially is the secondary. Now, I think that will be when Key Lawrence gets up to speed and they find a home for him. I get the feeling that it's only going to be a matter of time before they feel like they can't keep him off the field. But the next strength I would put in line behind offensive line is probably special teams. You have an excellent kicker, one of the best in the league. You should be really good in the return game with getting the Pac-12's best kickoff returner. You have a number of other options in both the punt and kick return game. You're usually pretty good in your coverage units. The biggest thing to me is going to be improving the punt game. So I think overall special teams will be a positive for Tennessee as another strength.
Will Overstreet, what do you see as a couple of more strengths for the Tennessee football team?
Well, I agree a lot there with Vince. I mean, the running back position, as I looked at, is a key area that I think you've got some special talent in, and so I think that should be definitely a strength for you. The defensive back area, you've got some experience there. You've got some guys that, you know, have shown flashes of kind of, you know, the next level experience and ability. So those two areas, those groups, I definitely think are going to be strengths. You know, when you're hearing a lot about the linebackers, you know, but that's kind of more of a question mark still for me of, you know, kind of like I'm doing with Garantano, what happens on the first game? Let's see where they show up and become. You've got some experience. You've got some talent, obviously, but that talent has to come out and show it. So those are really the defensive backs, your special teams, and your running backs, I think, are your three obvious strength areas.
John Pennington, do you see another area that could be a strength area for Tennessee?
Well, yeah. I mean, on paper, your offensive line, you know, everyone's counting on that to be a major step forward this year. Even if you don't have Cade Mays, which I know we'll talk about, but even if you don't have him, you do have a lot of guys who have experience. Now, there's no guarantee that some of these guys are going to get off on the right foot in week one because that's an area. Well, you can say this about the entire UT team, but that's an area where they've missed a lot of time due to COVID and quarantining and that kind of thing. But still, in terms of going into the season, the offensive line, most people would look at that as a strength. I think it certainly has the potential to be a strength. I like the other guys, too, in terms of running back. I wish they had a third proven guy, but you like the top two in terms of Chandler and Gray. And I think the defensive backs, specifically the corners, have a lot of talent. I may like Taylor's talent more than some other guys, but I think he's got talent. Bryce Thompson, we know what he can do. I think you've got a real potential there to have some shutdown corners if other things can work on the defense, which I'm sure we'll get to.
It's the Pigskin panel. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, but we've always said the offensive line, 1 year older, it doesn't necessarily turn out. So I'm never going to take that offensive line until they do it.
That's Will Overstreet, VFL, along with John Pennington of the Sports Source. They comprise our Pigskin panel, brought to you by Phoenix Conversions. When it has to be the best, call Phoenix Conversions. We come to you from Oak Ridge Nissan, their September football kickoff sale. With Vince Ferrar and Jimmy Himes, Sports Talk 99.1, the sports animal.
Name a more iconic duo than the Budweiser Studios and Cumulus Broadcasting. It's all right. I'll wait. This is Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. We come to you from Oak Ridge Nissan, the September football kickoff sale. They stiff-armed the competition to be the number one volume dealer in Tennessee. It is our Pigskin panel. It is brought to you by Phoenix Conversions, East Tennessee's truck accessory superstore. Our panelists, Will Overstreet, John Pennington. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Ferrar. All right, Will Overstreet, I want you to give me one area of concern for Tennessee, a potential weakness for this football team entering the season.
It has to be wide receiver, Jimmy. You've lost so much there. As we keep talking about, you lost your main guy, Juwan Jennings, that could get you a third down and breakthrough tackles and had all the talent in the world. And so you're going into this season not really knowing what you have. You hear good things, but, you know, nobody's proven. And so it's going to be the biggest, you know, kind of opening market, looking at the South Carolina game to see what you have and how does it compete in the SEC.
John Pennington, what do you see as a potential weakness?
I'm going to go with the whole front seven. I may be cheating there. I may be cavaliering the question, but I'm going to go with the whole front seven is a question mark. It doesn't mean they're going to be bad. Just I want to see what you've got. You've lost your headliners. You don't have a ton of proven depth at linebacker. You've got your you really only have one name guy in terms of Ko'o To'o there in the front seven. And on top of that, you got new coaches there. So to me, that's an area where I'll be interested to see how they perform. I'm a little worried that they might not be quite as good as they were a year ago. You lose Daryl Taylor, and you know, I don't want to give him the sack thing at the moment, but you're going to have to generate a pass rush in some way. So to me, that entire front seven, whereas I like the defensive backs, they're going to need some help up front, or else they're going to be left out there trying to cover guys 5 and 6 seconds. So I'm going to say the whole question mark for me is that front seven.
Vince Ferrara, your thoughts on a potential weakness?
Well, I think it's tight end. They're not going to have Austin Pope for this first game. I think they needed to be better at the position, even with a healthy Austin Pope. They need to be more dynamic and not personnel predictable. And they just don't have an every down type of guy right now. And Jeremy Pruitt, every time he would talk about him, and even Jim Chaney, really didn't say there was much separation there. I didn't get the feeling that any of those guys have been impressive enough in camp to be difference makers. And then in the run game as well for blocking, I think you're going to need them there as well, or they're going to have to use extra offensive linemen. So tight end, I think, can have a residual, maybe underestimated effect on the offense. And then obviously I think the D-line not having a difference maker is another position that is a concern for me, especially because Jeremy Pruitt has pointed out that he didn't think that those guys have been on the level that he expects them to be in camp.
So I wrote down all three of those, and the other one I had was a pass rush, which I guess ties in a little bit with what John Pennington said. I think that's a concern, the pass rush, being able to generate that. I think they have to be able to do that. I think they will certainly miss Daryl Taylor from that perspective. I think Kevon Bennett may have the best chance to lead the team in sacks, but I think that's going to be something they have got to do. And right now I think that's a potential concern with the loss of a guy as good as Daryl Taylor. Let's touch on the Cade Mays situation. He gets cleared by the NCAA. The next step is to get cleared by the SEC. The commissioner of the SEC pointed out in a couple of different settings, one, an interview with Jocks in Birmingham, and then on an SEC teleconference, that basically he's saying, why are people keep coming up with these waivers? If you don't like the rule, SEC presidents and schools, change the rule. Why are you asking me to grant all these waivers? Of course, he is going to listen to the appeal of Mays and make a decision. We'll see what happens. John Pennington, your thoughts on this? Right now, I don't think Mays is going to get cleared. Maybe I'm wrong. But your thoughts on this situation with Cade Mays?
Well, look, if it plays the same for everybody, then I'm okay with it. If the other guys, because there are two other guys trying to move inside the conference that he's waiting for the waiver on, okay. If it were me, I think the NCAA should just give everyone one free transfer where they can move. And you move without a penalty. And then I think the league needs to have a firm rule. A couple of years ago, they added the rule that you can't transfer inside the conference. And now they keep giving, well, we're going to listen to the appeal. If there's a rule, what's the appeal? You can't do it. No. Now, if it were me, and I go back and forth depending on the year, either let them all transfer inside the conference or don't. But make your rule and then say, no exceptions. It plays the same. I don't want to hear your appeal because we have a rule. You all voted on it. Live with it. That's the way I would handle it. If it's me, I think Cade Mays should be allowed to play. Go ahead and do it. And I would say the same thing if it were, say, Wanya Morris, who wanted to transfer to Georgia. Look, one free transfer. You can transfer inside the conference. Go with our blessing. But yep. If that's not the case, if you've got a rule on the books and everybody agreed to the rule on the books, stop appealing. It is a rule. Done.
Well, and here's the thing. I will say this. The non-transfer within the league has been a long-standing rule. In 2018, they amended it to say if you're a grad transfer, you can transfer within the league. And if you're at a school that has a postseason ban, you can transfer within the league. Otherwise, you can't. But this is only 2 years ago, and you have mostly, I would think, the same athletic directors and presidents and chancellors, and they didn't bring up, hey, let's alter this thing. They all went along with it. Will Overstreet, your thoughts on this?
Well, I think a lot would agree with John there, but, you know, the biggest thing I wonder about is, you know, this appeal process and all that stuff.
they have all the information. I mean, what I don't get is why there's a delay in the decision. Either make the call that, yes, you're going to allow these guys to do the transfer and be able to play, or just shut it off. But don't do this, well, there's a rule out there, but we're still going to hear the appeal. Listen, it's not like the information's changing every day. It's a pretty set of facts. I don't. That's the part where it's playing a little bit of politics here that is kind of rubbing me the wrong way. Is, you know, like John said, have the rule, follow the rule. There shouldn't be any appeals. You should be able to say, nope, they can't transfer. They're not going to play this year. Mm-hmm. Or go ahead and say they're free to, because if you think the appeal is actually going to do anything, you might as well just say, okay, these guys are allowed.
Vince, your thoughts?
Well, I think it's interesting that Jeremy Pruitt went from feeling very confident that Cade Mays was going to get that final waiver from the SEC because he said it's the right thing to do, knowing that that was the last step in the process, to then, without coming out and doing it harshly, basically questioning and trying to make his case for why the SEC should do it. So that certainly maybe there's been some clarification of that rule that maybe he didn't give a whole lot of thought on. But look, yes, it's been an existing rule other than the tweak a couple of years ago, but this is 2020. It's different circumstances this year. I don't care what the rule says. Do what's best for the student athletes under these circumstances. Let them play, and then you can address it with the athletic directors and the presidents in the off season and see if you want to go forward with it or not. Yeah. But I think all three players should get the clearance to go.
I do too under these circumstances. And by the way, I do not know if Cade Mays got on that plane to go to Columbia. I've been trying to find out, and I have not been able to get an answer on whether or not he made that trip. So I don't know when we'll find out. All right, when we come back, we've got a few other things to talk about, including Tennessee's potential record. What would be the reaction of the fan base based on a certain record? We come to you from Oak Ridge Nissan. It is the Pigskin Panel with our guests John Pennington and Will Overstreet, brought to you by Phoenix Conversions. This is Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Hey, I'm Ball for Life, Bobby Scott, and we're counting it down. It's just
one more day until
it's football time in Tennessee.
This Sports Radio WNML countdown to kickoff is brought to you by Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Find out more at tvacreditunion.com.
Go on!
Welcome back to Sports Talk. We're at Oak Ridge Nissan for their September football kickoff sale. It is our Pigskin Panel brought to you by Phoenix Conversions. Our guests, Will Overstreet and John Pennington, and they join us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline. All right, let's say Tennessee goes 5-5 this year. What will the fan reaction be? Do you think it'll be negative because there's this optimism coming off six consecutive wins, or do you think people will step back and say, we have to evaluate this? It could depend on COVID. It could depend on injuries. This is a bizarre year. So do you think there's going to be a feeling among the fan base that there will be a little bit more leniency because of all of these factors? Will Overstreet, how do you see that?
Well, you know, you got your 30 or 40% that 5-5 or whatever the record is going to be, they're going to look at this as a disaster and another bad thing about 2020. I think the majority of the fan base is going to take it in stride in the sense of, just like you said, how are you playing? Are you competitive in these games that you're losing? Do you look like you're close by? Do you look like you're in the same league? Or are you getting blown out? And why are you getting blown out? Is it because, you know, half your team, 40 of your guys weren't there? Then that's going to get some consideration. So I think it's very much going to be based on the type of fan that, you know, the groups you usually have, and break down that way. As far as the loudest group is going to be angry, but the rest are probably going to wait and see. But if they're not looking competitive and all things are equal, then you're going to get more than just the loud group. You're going to start having some of those people move over into that group with the doubts of, why did you give them an extension, and thinking that was a bad idea.
John Pennington, how do you see that?
I agree with Will on a lot of that. I think 5-5 is going to have some people complaining about an extension. I think also you have to pay attention to which games you win, which ones you lose. As we saw last year, lose to Georgia State and BYU, and people were already ready to move on to Jeremy Pruitt. I know you guys are taking calls on it. I was certainly getting emails on it. By the end of the year, they get on a win streak, and all of a sudden he's the greatest coach in the country, and Tennessee's back. If Tennessee goes 0-5 to start and wins their last five, that's a totally different feeling than winning their first five and losing their last five. So it depends on how you get to 5-5. But I think for the majority, most people are going to be accepting of that. I also, you look around at television numbers for just about every sport that's back, including college football, television ratings haven't been great. You also throw in the fact that UT got a lot further down their list on their ticket sales than I thought they would have to. I thought they'd get gone with the early donors. That didn't happen. So I wonder if sports fans are as engaged as they normally are. We've got a pandemic. We've got a recession. We've got an election that's going to split the country in half. I just wonder how many people are really going to look at Tennessee football and say, no, this is really what I'm concerned about. I think we've got other stuff, and that might benefit Tennessee in terms of people not being as fired up if the season goes the wrong way as they normally would be. I could be completely wrong on that, but I tend to look at most of the way my friends are following sports and the way I'm following sports. It's an asterisk year. There's an asterisk hanging over everything. And I think that will work in Tennessee's favor if they somehow have a bad year.
John, do you think the viewership numbers will be, I don't know about skyrocket, but improve greatly with the SEC playing?
I think it should help. I'm going to be really interested to see if the numbers are normal, if the numbers are where they normally would be. You would think that with fewer people in the stands, you'd have more people watching because you got, yeah, you know, 75,000 home fans that won't be there. They'll be at their homes watching TV this year. It'll be interesting to see. I do think it'll jump some. But I don't know. Most of the pro sports aren't killing it right now either. And I know people will say, well, it's social justice. Some of these leagues don't have anything to do with social justice. So I just think people are distracted right now. I mean, how can you not be when you think about, you got people out there who are worried about their business, worried about their rent. I think that's going to, maybe that's 10 people, maybe that's 100 people, maybe that's 10,000 people. But I think there's going to be some people that go, you know what? UT losing to Georgia isn't going to fire me up. I'm worried about how to put food on the table.
Vince, your thoughts on if Tennessee goes 5-5, will they get more leeway from the fan base?
Well, maybe a little bit more leeway than normal, but I still think it will not be received very well. And look, the things that John said, absolutely right in terms of, hey, people have other things to think about right now. We also haven't had the test and the passion of SEC football yet to see how people react to that. So we're about to find out if just how impacted they are with it in SEC football. But I think there's the expectation that this Tennessee team will be better than 500. And as you get closer to the year, more and more people to me have been in the 6-7 win range, and some even more than that. It's always split. It's never a consensus because some are silent, some are vocal. But I think it, and a lot of it does depend on when those wins and losses come. If you win your last three, including keeping Florida from winning the East, and maybe you beat them considerably, now you feel like you have some momentum taking it going into next year. So the timing and how you lose and all that does factor in. But overall, I don't think 5-5 will cut it for a fair amount of this fan base.
Well, Overstreet, I want to throw this one at you since you played at the college and pro level. So Tennessee had 44 out on a given Saturday and couldn't scrimmage. They had 57 out the next Monday. They've had at least 34 out over 2 weeks. How difficult is that to build a team and to build team chemistry when you've got that many people out?
It's very difficult, and it's even more difficult at certain positions like offensive line, you know, places like that where the guys are working as one unit. You know, all of a sudden you have a mixture of guys coming in that may or may not play in the game. And you may not be playing with, and you're having to learn how to trust them and then somebody else coming in. So it's difficult in that way, and it's also difficult another way in the sense of when you're scrimmaging. Are you going up against truly the guy, the level of talent that you're going to see in an SEC game? Or in that week,
somebody's out, it's the third string guy. And yeah, he's a college athlete, but he's not an SEC offensive lineman I'm going up against, or an SEC pass rusher. So that's the other part about this, is not just the cohesiveness of building out the team, but your reps and practice of the level of talent you're going up against gets diminished, and that hurts you as well.
That's Will Overstreet along with John Pennington. It is the Pigskin Panel. By the way, John Pennington, I do want to mention this to you. When Greg Sankey was on the teleconference on Wednesday, I asked him if the SEC had a tiebreaker in case teams played a different number of games. And he said, good question, we're working on it. Hadn't resolved that one yet, but they're working on it. So there you go. Hopefully we'll find out before week nine. So,
absolutely. Anyway. Not a good thing to hear.
Yeah. So, all right, our Pigskin Panel brought to you by Phoenix Conversions as we come to you from Oak Ridge Nissan, the September football kickoff sale. This is Sports Talk 99.1, the sports animal.
The voices in our head may not be real, but they're loud and have some good ideas. This is 99.1, the sports animal.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. We come to you from Oak Ridge Nissan, the September football kickoff sale. It is our Pigskin Panel with Will Overstreet, John Pennington. We got less than 2 minutes left, so I'm going to hit on a couple of quick topics. John Pennington, SEC team that you would put on upset alert this weekend?
It's probably what everyone would say, but I'm going to go with Auburn. Mark Stoops has done a good job at Kentucky. I think they're dangerous. I'm not a huge believer in Gus Malzahn. I think Stoops gets more out of his talent than Malzahn gets out of his. Week one, all the COVID nonsense. I'm going to go Kentucky would be the most likely to pull an upset.
Will Overstreet, who do you think?
Yeah, I've got to say Kentucky as well, just because it's one of those games. You've seen those guys. They've been around. They have some experience, especially on the offensive line. And so with that, you've got to say that those guys have been moving in the right direction, and they've shown that they believe in themselves and their ability. So I think you have to go with that.
Vince?
I agree. It's Auburn for those reasons. And if I had to pick a second most likely, probably be Tennessee at South Carolina.
And if I had to pick a second, I'm going to go Mississippi State. I know that sounds crazy, but with all the losses LSU has, and you never know what Mike Leach has up his sleeve, I'm going to say, and I'm taking Kentucky one, but Mississippi State would be another to think about. All right, need a quick prediction for the season. Will Overstreet, what will Tennessee's record be this year?
6-4 in the regular season.
All right. John Pennington.
5-5 if they beat South Carolina, 6-4. I think the swing game is week one, but I'm going 5-5. Yep. You've lost 7 out of 8 over there. Opening, you've had so many guys out, and South Carolina hasn't. That's why I think Carolina gets this one, but 5-5, 6-4 if they win.
Vince.
I also have Tennessee at 6-4. I think there's some questions about certain positions, but I think the coaching staff's ability to adjust will manage their way through some games, and they'll either get A&M or Auburn in the second half to have a strong finish to the season and get to 6-4 in the regular season.
I'm at 6-4 as well. I've got them beating South Carolina, but it does worry me a little bit that Pruitt's 0-2 in openers, but I'm going to go with Tennessee there. All right, John, if you would quickly, what can we look forward to this Sunday?
Well, we'll see you, we'll see Will, we'll see four other guys. Sunday morning, 11 a.m., we'll be breaking down the UT South Carolina game for 90 minutes. A lot of fun, a lot of information. Nobody covers as many topics in 90 minutes as we do. Join us. There's a reason we've been on for 18 years. So check us out Sunday morning on WATE and Facebook Live.
John Pennington with the Sports Source, VFL Will Overstreet. Thank you so much. Look forward to visiting with you again next week.
Thanks. Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
See you
and
guys.
That is our Pigskin Panel brought to you by Phoenix Conversions, East Tennessee's truck accessory superstore. When it has to be the best, call Phoenix Conversions. When we come back, we'll have more. This is Sports Talk 99.1, the sports animal.